This is Midday Magazine for Monday, June 29th. I'm Angela Denning. Icicle Seafoods, one of Alaska's largest seafood processors, is being sold to Indonesian companies Convergence Holdings and Dominion Catchers, owned by the wealthy Sotantio family. The deal isn't expected to close until August, but private investment firm Payne & Partners says they and Icicle Holdings Incorporated have entered into agreements to sell the company. Under the deal, Convergence will acquire Icicle's land-based wild seafood processing and farmed salmon activities, and Dominion will get the company's harvesting and processing vessels, as well as the associated fishing rights. Icicle is the largest private employer in the town of Petersburg, as the parent company, Petersburg Fisheries Incorporated. It draws around 600 workers to its cannery in the summer fishing season. The company got its start here in Petersburg in 1965 and was owned by local fishermen. It's unclear what will change with the purchase. The financial terms of the transactions were not disclosed. Payne & Partners declined to comment, but in a written statement they say that the new buyers have agreed to enter into long-term contracts to continue Icicle's diversified seafood operations. In a written statement, Icicle CEO Chris Rutgers said, quote, "We are pleased about this announcement under which Icicle will move forward with long-term owners who firmly share Icicle's commitment to quality and sustainability." He said, "Convergence and its affiliates have extensive industry experience that will allow for continued investment in Icicle's business." Haines residents can drink municipal tap water again. The State Department of Environmental Conservation rescinded a boil water notice issued last Wednesday because new tests showed no E. coli bacteria in the water system. A test processed earlier in the week did find the bacteria, which can cause diarrhea, vomiting, and more serious symptoms. Haines Borough Manager David Sosa got the news Friday afternoon.
The test results on all the samples came back negative, and as a result, we received a lifting of the boil water notice that was posted by DEC on the 25th.
The notice affected homes, offices, restaurants, and bars. Some residents turned to bottled water or springs around town. Officials said more positive test results would require flushing all or part of the municipal water system. That could have taken several days.
We know that there will be some additional testing for us, but as far as the residents of Haines are concerned, they can drink their water. And we'll just continue to work with DEC to make sure that we're taking all the steps necessary to provide for public health.
Haines residents were told to boil their water for 2 minutes, which kills the bacteria. Notices were handed out door to door. Sosa says he wasn't told why the earlier sample tested positive for E. coli. It could have been a false positive. Sea Alaska shareholders have returned five incumbents to the regional Native Corporation's 13-member board of directors. Results released at Saturday's annual meeting in Juneau show former board chairman and state senator Albert Kukesh winning the most votes. Close behind were Juneau's Barbara Cadiente Nelson, Haines's Bill Thomas, Juneau's Joe Nelson, the current chairman, and Washington State's Tate London. The board slate defeated five independent candidates. They were Yakutat's Ralph Wolf, Juneau's Karen Togg, and Brad Flitch, California's Catherine Edwards, and New Mexico's Ray Austin. A big issue this year was Sea Alaska's financial situation. Its operations and investments have lost money for the last 5 years. The Regional Native Corporation for Southeast Alaska has about 22,000 Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian shareholders. Each gets a vote for each share they own, the average being 100. No resolutions were on this year's ballot. Authorities have identified the 9 people killed when their sightseeing plane crashed into the side of a steep mountain in Misty Fjords National Monument outside of Ketchikan. They are 71-year-old Roland Cheney, 59-year-old Mary Dositer of Lodi, California, 31-year-old Glenda Cambiasso and 65-year-old Hugo Cambiasso of North Potomac, Maryland, 73-year-old June Cranenberg and 63-year-old Margie Apodaca and 70-year-old Raymond Apodaca of Sparks, Nevada, as well as the pilot, 64-year-old Brian Krill of Hope, Idaho. The 8 passengers were all traveling on a Holland America Line cruise ship. The float plane excursion was sold to them by the cruise company. All Friday and into the weekend, recovery crews worked at the crash site, KRBD's Layla Carey reports.
8 cruise ship passengers and their pilot died when their flight scene trip to Misty Fjords ended tragically. The de Havilland Otter lost contact about noon that day with its home base at Promec Air, a Ketchikan-based tour company. The authorities immediately were contacted to start searching. The plane soon was spotted on a cliff about 800 feet uphill from Ella Lake, a popular recreation spot with a U.S. Forest Service-maintained cabin. That became the base of operations for the rescue effort. Chris John is incident commander with the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad. He says weather conditions worked against them the day of the crash, plus the crash site was challenging. They used a helicopter to get as close as possible and then started hiking.
It took them about nearly an hour the first time because of conditions and also finding the best route across, because the terrain varies from forested area to slides to slippery, muddy slope. And so where you're going across there, you have to gear up for the conditions as you walk along, and including sometimes roping up.
Crews got to the plane nearly 6 hours after the initial call and discovered that everyone on board had been killed. At that point, it was still raining and starting to get dark, so they pulled back and went home to rest and regroup for a recovery effort the next day. John says crews were back on the scene mid-morning. The weather was better, and they already had a route to the site, so this time it only took about half an hour to hike over to the plane. Once the bodies have been retrieved by helicopter, John says they'll be taken to a U.S. Coast Guard boat and then brought to Ketchikan. From here, the bodies will be flown to Anchorage for examination by the state medical examiner. Alaska State Troopers and the National Transportation Safety Board are investigating the crash. An NTSB team has traveled to Ketchikan, but spokesman Keith Holloway says it will take a while to determine the cause of the crash. There's a lot of information that needs to be gathered first.
You know, looking at the aircraft, looking to see if there are any fractures on the metal of the aircraft, and looking for navigational equipment to see what the instruments were reading at the time of accident. Any clues that we can gain to try to find out what may have caused this accident.
Holloway says the Otter is too small to have a flight data recorder or black box on board, but NTSB will look into communications between the plane and any air traffic control service on the ground. He says weather is a possible factor in the crash. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The crash was the talk of the town in Ketchikan on Friday. As tourists took in the news, tour operators reassured their clients of the safety of the floatplane tours. Seaplane tours? Seaplane tours? Misty Fjords? Have you been to the Misty Fjords yet?
Dan Bowman sells tours from a booth on Berth 4. He says about 90% of the tourists he spoke with today were aware of the previous day's plane crash, killing 8 tourists and the pilot on a flight-seeing trip to the Misty Fjords National Monument, but people were still interested in the trip.
It's very gratifying. The Misty Fjords are a phenomenal trip. Everyone should have the opportunity.
Jacqueline and Gary Riley, who were aboard the Amsterdam, heard about it just before disembarking in Ketchikan.
There was somebody that was on Facebook in the elevator, and she told us about it. Yeah, she saw it on Facebook.
No one from the ship.
Nobody in the ship made the announcement, no.
Steve Kwan also heard the news aboard the Amsterdam from watching cable news television.
When I heard about it on the news, I thought it was the ship next to us docked in Juneau, but it wasn't. But I still felt kind of like, you know, that we lost somebody, because it was the same company and these 9 people were doing the same thing my mom and I are doing up here, you know, it hit home.
The victims of the plane crash were cruising aboard Holland America's Westerdam. Holland America also runs the Amsterdam and the Zaandam. The Zaandam captain made a general announcement to passengers on board that morning.
Said that there was a plane, I think it was 8 passengers, sightseeing plane that crashed. Offered his condolences and asked everybody, asked for us to keep our thoughts and our prayers for the passengers and the pilot. So, and it was more or less a brief announcement.
Steve Castle added that he and his wife responded to several text messages reassuring their children and friends they were safe. The general announcement aboard the ship also included information regarding an interfaith service that would be held aboard the ship in honor of the deceased. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Ruth Eddy.
A Sitka woman missing for nearly 3 years has been declared dead. Police are now investigating her disappearance as a homicide. The inquest for 33-year-old Lael Grant was held Thursday morning in Sitka Superior Court. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports from Sitka.
Judge Leonard Devaney and six jurors gathered to hear testimony on the circumstances of Lael Grant's disappearance in 2012. Grant's family filed the presumptive death request this spring in order to obtain her death certificate. Former Search and Rescue Director Don Kluding described the exhaustive effort his department made to locate Grant, who was last seen buying snacks and soft drinks in a local grocery store at 2 o'clock in the morning on October 15, 2012. 5 days later, her car was found at the end of the Nelson Logging Road with the receipt from the grocery store, her ID, her favorite pair of headphones, and other personal effects. Kluding told the jury that he began a Type 1 search, which presumes a missing person to be alive. But as the days went by and the man-hours began to number in the thousands, Kluding said the search evolved into a Type 3. "We were searching for a body," Kluding said, and he added this: "There was a criminal aspect to the case." Other details emerged over the course of 3 hours of testimony at the inquest. Former Sitka Police Detective Jason Sexton told the court about Grant's involvement with drugs and Sitka's drug culture. He said Grant liked to hike, often alone, but the Nelson Logging Road was not where she usually went. He had no explanation why her car would be parked there. Ryan Silva, who is still working as a detective with the Sitka Police Department, was even more direct. "This case remains open as a potential homicide." Silva told jurors that he was on a first-name basis with Grant. She was candid about her drug use and her struggle to hold her family together. He had seen her a few days prior to her disappearance, also in the early morning at the grocery store, and said she was high, most likely on meth. Silva said Grant was under stress. She had broken up with her boyfriend, and her father had just died. His funeral was the day before she was last seen. Silva told the court he is still actively pursuing leads in the case, especially from the grocery store surveillance video taken the last time Grant was seen. Silva was unable to talk about the details of the investigation, only to say, "My focus now is to find her remains." That Lael Grant never left Sitka was also the conclusion of the jury. The three men and three women deliberated less than 20 minutes before returning a verdict. They ruled that Lael Grant died in Sitka on or about the 20th of October 2012, due to circumstances yet to be discovered. Grant's older sister, Erica Burkhaus, also testified at the hearing. She told the jury that even at her worst moments, as she was taken over by drugs, Lael Grant always tried to do her best by her children. Speaking to reporters while awaiting the verdict, Burkhaus said obtaining a death certificate has been an important step toward closure for her family. Grant's two sons are age 15 and 12 now, living in Sitka with Grant's mother, and they all would like a memorial. Burkhaus also wants some good to come from her sister's death.
"It is really eye-opening to see how much the drug world has affected everything in this town, you know? And I, throughout all of this, my hope is, I mean, obviously to get closure, but my hope also is that people open their eyes a little bit and realize that, you know, this is a huge problem. It really is."
Burkhaus says that her sister lived and died under horrific circumstances. The pictures circulated by law enforcement at the time she went missing show a young woman consumed by addiction. But Lael Grant had a caring family, a solid backstop of support. Burkhaus believes she might have made it back if only she had the chance.
"I think she just got too far in, you know, and she was in a really bad place after my dad passed away. So I would like to think so. She was a strong person. She really was. And those boys meant the world to her, and despite what was happening in her unhealthy lifestyle, she still somehow was a good mom."
Burkhaus was aware that police were investigating Grant's death as a possible homicide. She says rumors surrounding her disappearance complicated the investigation at first, and a large reward generated many false leads. Nevertheless, now that the family has closure for Lael Grant's life, they're hoping for justice for her death. If I had one wish at this point in time, Berkow says, that would be the wish. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And this wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.